that Israel is hiding since the 1960s. Dimona Nuclear Plant.
That's the gate. Go inside.
This is the gate to Dimona?
Yes.
Only a few people in the world can say they know each corner of Dimona Nuclear Plant. And all of them are sworn to secrecy. But there is someone that knows exactly how the building looks like.
It was a secret competition with the design of the civic center of a new atomic research center that was to be built in Dimona, in the south part of Israel. For security reasons, we couldn't call it a big center of research, what it was called, civic center in the Negev. In the 60s, it wasn't such big news to have a textile factory in Dimona. So if you build something large in Dimona, you could very easily say, you see, this is a textile factory. Only that this textile factory had a dome and it wasn't typical of textile things, but it wasn't seen from the road. It was kind of an agreed quietness. I have the photograph. While the project was being built, not when it was occupied. Then, at that time, the security eye was not that strong. So I took the photographs. Later, many years afterwards, I all of a sudden got several photos from an unknown source, but with a stamp of the censorship. So I understood that somebody from the site sent me photos that were taken there. There's a sign that I can open my small portfolio and make it public.
For how many years you kept these photos in secret? How many years did you
60.
Building?
They.
Did you went inside?
I haven't seen my own project since then. I couldn't go in all these years.
This message is transmitted at the request of the United States.
When President Kennedy took office, he knew from a CIA secret report that Israel was developing a nuclear program in the Negev. Beginning of January 1961, Kennedy met the Israeli ambassador in Washington and expressed that the USA wanted to inspect Dimona to be sure about its purposes. Israel accepted, but under one condition, if it was done on a secret basis. For 5 months, the visit of the American inspectors to Dimona nuclear plant was postponed several times by Israel. Finally, an ultimatum from USA was accepted. Two American scientists were allowed to visit Dimona in May 1961. Israel imposed several rules on the American inspectors. They were not allowed to take any pictures or issue any comments about Dimona. When the inspectors finally entered the plant, they were misled. They were shown a fake control room on the ground floor. 12th of January 1961, the aim of the building built in the Negev was clear. In a high-level meeting between President Eisenhower and his staff, the U.S. Secretary of Defense informs the president that based on intelligence findings, Israel was lying and Dimona was not for peaceful purposes.
Thank you.
They were unaware of the six floors below where the plutonium was made. In search of answers, we travelled to Berlin in Germany. Here we are going to meet Xanthe Hall. She is an expert in nuclear weapons and the director of International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Xanthe Hall is also the coordinator of the European Parliament Commission Against Nuclear Proliferation.
The Israel Atomic Energy Commission is one of the most secret institutions in the world. It's responsible for Dimona. Its chairman is Netanyahu, but it's not even officially recognized as existing. All the other nuclear plants in the world are monitored by the Atomic Energy Agency, but not the ones in Israel. So we think it's about time that Dimona was also monitored. The one thing that needs to happen is that an independent body like the IAEA would go into Dimona and find out what is going on there, what is the state of the substance of the building, is the containment of the nuclear reactor still intact, what are they doing about cooling, where is the nuclear waste being stored, how is it being stored, and all these questions, they need to be answered. We need some transparency.
Israel has not ratified the Non-Proliferation Treaty, a way of avoiding inspections to its nuclear sites.
Why do you think that the international community behaves with Israel in this special way?
First of all, we are not obliged. We are not part of the treaties. We never signed the treaties, so we don't oblige. We never said we won't. That's one thing. Second thing is the US, and the third thing is the Holocaust.
How?
Guilt. Do you see Germany? Germany sold us the submarines. The US, they let us steal uranium. You go to the UN, to the NPT, to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and you hear the U.S. delegation reading their statements, and when they talk about Israel, you see paragraphs that you know from the language was written by Israelis.
So Israel has a special treatment?
Yes, we're a special case.
Yoshi Melman is known as an investigative journalist specialized in intelligence and strategic affairs. He was described by WikiLeaks as an information mule who has exchanged tips with the Mossad. But in 2009, Melman uncovered a terrible secret about Dimona. Workers at the nuclear reactor facility were made to volunteer to drink uranium in 1998 as part of an experiment.
The workers themselves already cannot say anything. They have so many contracts saying that they cannot say. The question is the family. So usually in order for them to get compensation, the families also have to say they will not sue, they will not say, they will not speak to the media, and so on. So we know only when they have settlements, when the court say settlement, that they give some money, but we don't know how much usually, and we don't know how many, and we don't know what condition. And also their doctors are only doctors that work with the commission.
I mean, if you only have a nuclear reactor that is making energy like Chernobyl or Fukushima, that's just one thing. You have lots of possibilities for accidents, but if you've got added to that, you've got uranium enrichment, you've got plutonium reprocessing, and you have actually the making of the warheads, then you have, you know, many more possibilities. Have there already been accidents? There's been some rumours and speculation that in 1966 there was a criticality accident at Dimona. We don't know what's been happening in that plant, and actually it seems that there's probably more secrecy than there was in the Soviet Union, because quite quickly after the Chernobyl accident it was actually said that there had been the accident. So I think Israel is more better to compare on the level of secrecy about a nuclear program with perhaps North Korea. because we know nothing about their program either. We do know that they have one, and at least North Korea is making claims that it has nuclear weapons, whereas Israel is pretending that it doesn't. So I'm not trying to say that there will be worse or better, but there are many more possibilities, so the risk is definitely higher.
Our next stop in search of answers about the Israeli nuclear program and its secrets is a Palestinian village. Daria, very close to Dimona, and a military field where Israel might be burying nuclear waste from Dimona. In Daria, a Palestinian doctor struggles to keep Dimona's victims alive. Cesium is not present in nature and can only be found in areas where a nuclear disaster or test takes place.
We know how cesium works on the body because of Chernobyl and Fukushima. Both of those accidents showed us a lot of about how cesium actually affects human health, and that there are claims that there has been a study that has found cesium in the region, and cesium is an indication that something has happened with a nuclear activity. It most likely would be, depending on the amount of it, would be from a nuclear accident, or it could be from leaking radioactive waste.
In some areas of Palestine, the presence of cesium is at the same levels as in Chernobyl or Fukushima, places where the worst nuclear accidents took place.
It's a radioactive isotope. It has a half-life of 30.2 years, and it acts like potassium or like salt. It's water-soluble, so it can spread very quickly through the body, and it tends to concentrate then in muscle tissue. And you also have muscles in certain organs like heart and stomach and intestines, so that's where often cesium will end up. And at that point, it starts then to mutate the cells within those muscles, and you end up with cancer of the colon, cancer of the stomach, of the lungs sometimes, and it can lead to heart disruption.
There are many rumors about where they bury the waste, but my, and not just my estimations, are that all the materials are buried in the area surrounding the reactor, and the reason is that these materials are secret. They don't want people to go and take land samples or go with Geiger.
The Geiger counter is an electronic device that measures the level of radioactivity. These devices are allowed for use everywhere in the world. It is sold everywhere, even online, but not in Israel. Despite claiming to be democratic, Israelis cannot buy a Geiger counter inside Israel.
One of the major problems that we have, again, it goes back to the secrecy problem, is that we can't even measure the amount of radiation in the area, because that's not allowed. And the Israeli law even says that if you take a Geiger counter into the area around Dimona and measure the radioactivity, you could be then sentenced to 15 years in prison. So nobody's going to do that. I know people even thought about doing it, but they didn't. It's certainly very risky to try to do any research on this at all, which is why number one problem is to get rid of the secrecy.
What is the security of Israel, and why the security of Israel is so different than the security of the people that live in Israel? And we hear rumors about buildings where the levels of cancer is unbelievable. And when we wanted to ask doctors, we also didn't get any answers. And one of funny or sad answer we got was that we cannot measure the amount of cancer, radiation-related cancer in Israel, because we had so many people coming from Chernobyl, from Kiev, and that changed the numbers. So that was one answer we got. And of course, this is not a serious answer. People in Dimona are not rich, most of them. This is, if they were rich people, they wouldn't live next to a reactor, I guess. They wouldn't be depending on this reactor for their livelihood. A few years ago, they all got iodine pills that were very old iodine pills, and that was it. And they're not asking, and that's the problem, that they are more afraid to talk about it than the radiation.
But there are more cases around Palestine. In a small village lost in Al-Khalil Hills, there are other victims. One of them has already died. His son fears the consequences of telling his father's story and only accepts to talk if we protect his identity. The medical report from a Jordanian hospital is clear. This former Dimona employee suffered from cancer. Officially, nobody claims that Dimona is the cause. This and many other cases come from the same region. Israeli nuclear program is surrounded by a novel atmosphere. This man is Arnon Milchan, famous Hollywood producer behind films like Pretty Woman, Club of Fighters, or LA Confidential. But there is no story like that of Mordechai Vananus. Vananu was a nuclear technician in Dimona till 1985. Before quitting, he snapped two rolls of film at the top-secret nuclear plant. The world was stunned when the Sunday Times published Vananu's story and photos, exposing for the first time the secrets of Israel's nuclear arsenal in October 1986. But Israeli intelligence found Mordechai Vananu, and they waited for the right moment to strike. They sent a woman agent to seduce Mordechai Vananu in London and convince him to travel with her to Rome. Vananu was vulnerable and afraid and fell for Mossad's honey trap. When the article was published on October the 5th, 1986, Vananu had vanished. His kidnap, an illegal act on foreign soil, was kept secret. Later, when Vananu appeared for a secret court session in Jerusalem al-Quds, he found a way to reveal what had happened to him since he left London. Writing on his hand, Vananu M was hijacked in Rome. Vananu's trial was held in secret. He was found guilty of treason and espionage and sentenced to 18 years in jail, 11 of them in solitary confinement. The woman that seduced Vananu was Cheryl Bentov. After she completed her mission, she disappeared back into her secret world. Today, she lives back in Orlando, USA, with her husband and two daughters, running a real estate business. Vananu's revelations confirmed suspicions and showed a weapons program bigger and more advanced than anyone had previously thought. Mordechai Vananu was released in 2004, but he is not a free man. Israeli borders are now his prison. His passport was confiscated and he cannot contact foreigners.
This Jewish state have 200 atomic weapons, have hydrogen bomb, atomic weapons, neutron bomb, and they are not able to say they have the bomb. They are not able to destroy anyone. They are not able to use the bomb. Instead, they arrest Vanunu Mordechai.
What we are going to see now is something that has never been shown in a non-Israeli TV channel. A 3D tour inside the Israeli bomb factory, recreated thanks to the photos taken by Mordechai Vanunu. This is Institute Number 1, Dimona's symbol, the only building seen from far away. A 20 metres high nuclear reactor dome. In 1986, Vanunu took us inside. A heavy water reactor built in the 50s with France and Norway's help, with a capacity of 24 megawatts. Thanks to Vanunu, we learned that this reactor capacity is three or possibly even five times larger than assumed. This reactor produces 40 kilograms of plutonium a year, enough to build 10 to 12 atomic bombs. Adjacent to the reactor is Institute Number 3. Here, the fuel rods powering the reactor are produced, together with lithium-6, another ingredient of the bomb. This is Institute Number 5. Here, the fuel rods are coated with the aluminium. Institute Number 6 is the power station of the compound. The lab is in Institute Number 8, and inside is another secret revealed by Mordechai Vanunu. This is where Israel produces enriched uranium. Like plutonium, it can serve as fissionable material for the bomb. The uranium is produced through gas centrifuges. Enriched uranium is also produced in Institute Number 9 using laser, a unique Israeli patent. Institute Number 10 produces the depleted uranium, an important component in the production of armor-piercing shells. Institute Number 4 handles the radiation waste prior to it being disposed. And this long two-story building with no windows is Dimona's biggest secret. Institute Number 2. Beneath the two innocent-looking floors, hidden underground, are six additional floors. It was Vanunu who showed the world what no satellite could see. Here, Israel set up a plutonium separation facility with one goal: the manufacturing of atomic bombs.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Ivanka Trump has testified in the ongoing civil fraud trial of her father, Donald Trump, and his business in New York. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Ivanka Trump testified in the ongoing civil fraud trial of her father, Donald Trump, and his business in New York on Wednesday, 8th of November, the fourth and final member of the Trump family to take the stand. Former President Donald Trump's eldest daughter is not a defendant in her family's fraud trial. Evidence presented in court on Wednesday, 8th of November, indicated she was involved in at least one deal during her time at the Trump Organization that was facilitated by a document that inflated her father's net worth. Trump submitted a 2011 financial statement, which was meant to be a snapshot of his wealth at the time, to a bank executive and copied Ivanka Trump, who was negotiating a loan. Ivanka Trump is appearing 2 days after her father testified for four tense hours, repeatedly lashing out at the judge overseeing the case, and New York Attorney General Letitia James. Donald Trump and two of his sons are accused of a decade of fraud tied to false inflation of his net worth and the value of Trump Organization properties. Ivanka Trump was an executive at the Trump Organization until 2017, when she left the organization to join her father in the White House. She was originally a defendant in the lawsuit, but a New York appellate court dismissed claims against her in June, ruling that they were barred by the state statute of limitations. Louis Solomon, a lawyer for the Attorney General's office, opened the testimony by asking Ivanka Trump about her work history and involvement in a variety of business deals for the Trump Organization. Louis Solomon soon turned to a statement of financial condition from 2011 that described her father's assets. Trump enclosed the document in a letter to Deutsche Bank, then chief executive officer, while Ivanka Trump was leading negotiations for a loan relating to a Florida golf course. The judge has already found that the statement portrayed Trump's wealth as far higher than it actually was. 1 month later, the bank offered a deal with significant better loan rates than the Trump Organization had previously been offered. "It doesn't get better than this," Ivanka Trump wrote in one email, forwarding the offer to other Trump Organization executives. Earlier in the trial, a former Deutsche Bank executive who analyzed risk for loans to high net worth individuals testified that the bank relied on, at least in part, the statement of financial condition of that year. "I assumed that the representations of the value of the assets and liabilities were broadly accurate," said Nicholas Haig, the executive of Deutsche Bank. Ivanka Trump said she didn't recall sending the email or seeing the letter to the bank chief executive officer. The deal involved a loan for the Trump National Doral Golf Course in Florida, one of her two biggest projects while working for her father's company. She maintained more than a dozen times that she had forgotten many of the deals from her negotiations relating to loans that buttressed her father's efforts to buy the course. Her recollection of many interactions and meetings, she said, extended only to what she had been shown by James's office during an August 2022 deposition. Asked about discussions while her father related to the deal, she said she remembered them only because of the deposition. Cable broadcaster CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. Ivanka Trump's appearance on Wednesday, 8th of November, was the highly anticipated conclusion to an unprecedented 8 days of witness testimony that included Donald Trump and three of his adult children in the civil fraud trial brought by the New York Attorney General's office. The New York Attorney General's office rested its case after hearing from the eldest Trump daughter, Ivanka Trump, who was pressed about her role securing loans for the Trump Organization and a penthouse apartment she leased from her father. Her appearance was not anywhere near as contentious as her father's on Monday. New York Attorney General focused on Deutsche Bank's loan negotiations. Ivanka Trump distanced herself from her apartment's valuation on Donald Trump's financial statement. Ivanka Trump acknowledged discussing Trump Organization business with her husband, Jared Kushner. The Attorney General's office rested its case after calling 25 witnesses. Donald Trump's team will begin its defense on Monday, 13th of November. They previewed a key aspect on Wednesday, 8th of November, as they focused on emails where Deutsche Bank was happy to have the Trump Organization as a client. Ivanka Trump was cordial and very courteous, but the New York Attorney General questioned the credibility of her testimony on Wednesday, 8th of November. Ivanka Trump was cordial, she was disciplined, she was controlled, and she was very courteous, but her testimony raises questions with regards to its credibility, which will be a question for the finding of fact, New York Attorney General Letitia James said outside of the courtroom. She added, The reality is that based on the evidence, the documentary evidence, she clearly was involved in negotiations and securing loans, favorable loans, for the benefit of the Trump Organization, for Mr. Trump and her brothers, and for herself. At the end of the day, this case is about fraudulent statements of financial condition that she benefited from. She was enriched, and clearly you cannot distance yourself from that fact. The documents do not lie, the numbers do not lie. The website of National Public Radio, NPR, has also covered this story. Ivanka Trump's testimony before a New York judge on Wednesday, 8th of November, offered a glimpse into the strategy that former President Donald Trump's legal team could deploy as they begin their defense in the case. Jesus Suarez, one of the attorneys in the Trump legal team, conducted her cross-examination, making her the only Trump family member who was questioned by the defense. Suarez asked Ivanka Trump if she was personally responsible for submitting, preparing, reviewing, or approving the financial statements. To all of them, Trump answered no. But Suarez also asked her about what interactions Trump Organization executives may have had with members of Deutsche Bank, one of the financial institutions that received financial statements from the Trump Organization that have already been ruled fraudulent. "They were very happy," she said, one of the bank's reactions to finished projects. She also said they thought that the old post office in Washington, which for a time was the Trump International Hotel, was the crown jewel of their investment portfolio. The pattern of questioning by the defense, which sought to establish the fact that no financial institution or anyone else suffered because of the Trump Organization's deals, could be how the defense makes the case that not only did Trump's actions harm no one, banks actually benefited from them. The former president has often argued that he has done nothing wrong, adding that banks and buyers he dealt with were happy with the negotiations and final results. He argued it's not a crime because there is no victim. But under New York law, lying isn't allowed in business, even if no one was harmed. Indeed, the state attorney general's lawsuit argues that the manipulating of numbers to inflate or deflate net worth for financial gain is indeed a crime.
This is for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program For a Better Life, and I am Beta, the narrator of today's episode, and I have the honor to be at your service, dear listeners. In today's episode, I'm going to talk more about the scientific aspect of Holy Quran and its effect on everyday life. You know, for the very beginning step of doing everything is to believe, to have faith that that thing has a kind of specific effect on your life. So if you believe that reciting Holy Quran and thinking in every part of this book will help you in order to have a better life, then it's going to be really joyful for you. It's going to be kind of enjoyable for you to recite the Holy Quran and think in that and dig into the meaning of these really beautiful books. And in order to reach to this level of awareness and reach to the level of understanding that Holy Quran is a book for you, sent from Allah Almighty to guide you, to lead you to the happiness, to the eternal beauty, and for being actually proud of yourself, proud of what you did in this world at a resurrection day. In order to do that, we're going to have some facts and analyze some miraculous aspects of Holy Quran. In this episode, specifically, we're going to talk about scientific parts of the Holy Quran. By the way, you know, any person now who wants to be a biologist, physicist, astronomer, whatever, physician, needs to study for at least 20 years, you know, aided by sophisticated machines, tools, expert supervision, libraries, and so on. Then he might be able to break through and discover some of the hidden facts of nature. The Quran uncovers many secrets of the universe, and these are not confined to any special sector of science. And I think I have to mention this really important fact that Quran is not a scientific book. It's a guideline that will help you in every aspect of your life, no matter the social part or the personal part. Both of them together will help you. It's not a scientific book to tell you scientific facts or to learn you something about science, but still it has so many scientific facts in it in different parts of the Holy Quran, only for you to understand that this is a miracle which is only possible by Allah Almighty himself. So let's keep it here, go for a short break, then we're gonna come back.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
Oh, 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 oh.
Your love is all I need. To be all
so
I can
need.
Be. And I know that you see how much you need.
You mean to me,
'cause your love is all I need. To be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
Allah it is who raised the heavens without visible supports, then mounted the throne and compelled the sun and the moon to be service. Each runs unto an appointed term. He orders the course. He details the revelations that helpfully you may be certain of the meeting with your Lord. The invisible supports most probably means the forces of gravitation, magnetic and others that exist in the universe which hold the planets apart and in relation to each other. Welcome back. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to For a Better Life. We're talking about the scientific aspect and the miraculous scientific aspect of Holy Quran in order to know more about this holy book and accept it and use it as the guideline, the main guideline that we have in order to have the best lifestyle, which will lead to the happiness, satisfaction, and success of afterlife. So let's have some more examples of these scientific hints that we can see through Holy Quran. And if we opened unto them a gate of heaven, and they kept mounting through it, they would say, our sight is wrong, nay, but we are folk bewitched. Anyone hearing this verse for the first time might exclaim, is this really in the Quran which was revealed 400 years ago, giving clues to people to travel to the heavens and telling them beforehand of the wonders there and telling them of unusual phenomena and unfamiliar scenes and facts that the world of today is still puzzled by? So, as we see, this miracle is beyond our imaginations. At the time that people even didn't know that Earth is turning around the sun, and they actually tortured all the scientists that believed this fact, the Holy Quran had these beautiful facts about this scientific points of creation. So this is a miracle which is obvious for everyone. As you know, Holy Quran has another aspect of miracle, which is language miracle. And it is mostly kind of tangible and touchable for Arab people, especially those educated Arab people, because as you know, in Arabic, there is a difference between the language that they speak and they use as the routine one and the language of their literature and history. So here, this aspect of miracle of Holy Quran is completely touchable for all of the people around the world. It doesn't matter whether you speak Arabic or not, you can understand the deep miracle which is lying in the verses of Holy Quran. So let's go for another beautiful scientific fact. You see the mountains and think them firmly fixed, but they shall pass away as the clouds pass away. This refers to the spinning of the earth and its own excess and gives the real picture of this huge mountain moving as clouds move. So as we see, all of these verses can be mesmerizing only if you want to study, if you want to think, and if you want to accept the truth of the world of creation and our Creator. Those who disbelieve our revelation, we shall expose them to the fire. As often as their skins are consumed, we shall exchange them for fresh skins that may taste the torment. Allah is ever mighty wise. Nerves in the skin that feel the pain and the torture. There are numerous other verses of scientific content, and many are the volumes dealing with them. So, as we see up to here, we talked about some scientific hints of Holy Quran, and at the last episode, we talked about this important and sad point and fact that nowadays Muslims mostly neglect Holy Quran in their a day-to-day life, which is really sad. So we have to take steps in order to revive the presence of Holy Quran in the lives of Muslims. Thank you for listening to me. I hope you live the best life of yours under the guidelines of Holy Quran. And thank you for listening to me. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Since the latest spate of attacks by the Zionist regime against the civilian population of the Gaza Strip, Western countries, most notably the United States, have voiced their unequivocal support for the Israeli regime and ignored the legitimate rights of the Palestinians. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Russia Today, the RT network, has covered this story and tells us more. US President Joe Biden ruled out any hope of achieving a lasting ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip. When asked about the chances of a firm cessation in hostilities, President Biden told reporters outside the White House on Thursday, 9th of November, none, no possibility. Speaking to reporters separately later in the day as he was boarding Air Force One, President Biden revealed he had been pushing for a pause in fighting for a lot more than 3 days. However, the United States has not managed to secure even that long of a pause from Israel, which is apparently determined to continue its war against the civilian population of the Gaza Strip. Thus far, Israel has only agreed to implement daily humanitarian breaks, National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby revealed during a press conference, claiming this development a significant step forward. The Israeli regime's war minister, Yoav Gallant, said the four-hour periodic pauses by the Israeli military announced on Thursday, 9th of November, do not amount to a ceasefire and will not affect the fighting in Gaza. He stressed there would be no ceasefire until the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas releases hostages held in Gaza. The Israeli regime has repeatedly rejected the prospect of reaching any sort of ceasefire with Hamas while the group continues to hold captives. Since the latest spate of violence between Israel and Palestinian resistance fighters in Gaza, Western countries and most notably the United States have voiced their unequivocal support for the Israeli regime and ignored the legitimate rights of the Palestinians. President Joe Biden has unequivocally defended the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza. Biden stressed that Washington would provide the embattled Israeli regime with everything it needed to defend itself. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The United States has said it's still not drawing any red lines for Israel, which has killed or massacred upwards of 11,000 people during a yet ongoing war against the Gaza Strip. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby made the remark at a press briefing recently. In late October, the official had said that the United States administration was not drawing any red lines for Israel despite mounting civilian fatalities in Gaza. John Kirby was asked during the press conference if that's still the case, that the administration had no red lines for Israel. John Kirby answered, "That's still the case." He also claimed, "It's also true that airstrikes continue, and it's also true that civilians keep dying from these airstrikes." The remarks came on the 32nd day of a genocidal war by the Israeli regime on the besieged Gaza Strip. The war started after the Palestinian resistance movements waged a surprise attack against the Israeli occupying regime. That strike was dubbed Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, in response to a decades-long campaign of bloodletting and devastation against Palestinians of Gaza. Reporters also asked John Kirby whether the United States had raised the prospect of suspending or reducing its aid to Israel given the rising casualties in Gaza. The spokesperson said, "We're going to make sure they continue to have what they need. The United States, Israel's biggest and oldest ally, has provided the regime with thousands of arms consignments since the initiation of the war. Recently, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a standalone $14.3 billion military assistance package for Israel. However, the legislation is yet to clear the U.S. Senate. Washington, which has backed Tel Aviv's ferocious attacks on Gaza as a means of self-defense, has also been casting its veto against the United Nations Security Council resolutions that have all condemned the occupying Israeli regime about its aggression in Gaza. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. U.S. Democratic Representative Rashida Tlaib of Michigan has slammed President Joe Biden for supporting the continued Israeli genocide of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. In a video posted recently on X, Rashida Tlaib, who hails from the same party as Joe Biden, warned him that Americans will remember when he's up for re-election next year. She said in the video, "Mr. President, the American people are not with you on this one. We will remember in 2024. After she speaks, the screen goes dark and a message appears in white lettering saying, "Joe Biden supported the genocide of the Palestinian people. The American people won't forget. Biden, support a ceasefire now or don't count on us in 2024. Rashida Tlaib, who is the only Palestinian-American in Capitol Hill, has been at the forefront of a group of lawmakers rebuking President Biden for supporting the apartheid Zionist regime's relentless onslaught on the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian-American lawmaker, who is a longtime advocate for Palestinian rights, has been the most outspoken critic of the Israeli regime in the U.S. Congress since her election in 2018. She said in part, "I grieve the Palestinian lives lost yesterday, today and every day. I'm determined as ever to fight for a just future where everyone can live in peace, without fear and with true freedom, equal rights and human dignity." She added, "The path to the future must include lifting the blockade on Gaza Strip, ending the occupation and dismantling the apartheid system that creates the suffocating, dehumanizing conditions that can lead to resistance. The failure to recognize the violent reality of living under siege, occupation and apartheid makes no one safer." Rashida Tlaib recently faced a resolution by pro-Israeli lawmakers in the U.S. Congress aimed at censuring her over her comments, which were critical of the Israeli regime and in support of Palestinians. However, the House of Representatives ultimately tabled the resolution. Rashida Tlaib condemned the move, targeting her, saying the resolution had been counterproductive. She noted, "The resolution is deeply Islamophobic and attacks peaceful Jewish anti-war advocates. I'm proud to stand in solidarity with the Jewish peace advocates calling for a ceasefire and an end to the violence in the Gaza Strip. I will not be bullied, I will not be dehumanized, and I will not be silenced. I will continue to call for ceasefire and the immediate delivery of humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip."
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part of the program, we went beneath the world's oceans to discover what has happened to the millions of tons of chemical weapons that have been dumped in the sea since the early 20th century. Now, as we have entered the 21st century and forgotten the days of the war, real time bombs are ticking under the seas of the planet. The Baltic Sea, the most polluted sea in the world, is rife with tons of highly toxic and explosive cocktails of chemical weapons inherited from two world wars, which threaten us today. Stay with us for the second part of the documentary as we go across the Atlantic to see the legacy of two world wars all around the United States coast.
First of all, we are interested in that the fishing vessels and the fishing or the fishers are not getting injured by fishing that substances up. And therefore, we encourage them to, by having a regime here in the Danish area where we compensate them economically by paying, in fact, the same amount for the cost of the value of the fish they could sell on the market. Here we have the mustard gas in the middle of the fishes. That is something that has happened through the years, going from fluid to solid mustard gas. We have recent cases, both in Denmark, but also elsewhere in the world, where you see that the fishing vessel, the people that are dealing with the chemical substances afterwards are contaminated and injured. So we still find subjects that contains both chemical substances but also the explosive. We have a 24/7 365 response team ready to go out to sea and assist the fishing vessels that have caught chemical munitions. So that is the unique part of the unit here in Bornholm. The last chemical report that we have was in March this year here, so it's a couple of months ago. That's the only one this year. So compared to in the 90s, where we had more or less between 50 and 100 cases per year, it has gone down.
In recent years, deep-sea construction projects began in the Baltic Sea, and with them came fears that pollution could result with an accidental disturbance of the chemical arms.
The Nord Stream project is setting new benchmarks. The dual pipeline, which is more than 1,200 kilometers long and runs through the Baltic Sea, links the energy markets of Western Europe and the huge natural gas reserves in Russia.
We're in Lahnfurt, Germany. This is where the pipeline comes out of the Baltic Sea, and this is where the gas enters the European gas grid. The munitions issue meant that we had to do extensive detailed surveys. Once the alignments of the pipelines were defined, we then did the detailed munitions surveys. We did very high-resolution side-scan sonar surveys, magnetometer surveys, and bathymetric surveys. And then within the installation corridor, so that's where the pipeline could touch the seabed, we did gradiometer survey works and visual inspections. And out of those, we identified over 400 munitions along the pipeline route. To allow us to have a safe corridor, we had to clear munitions within plus or minus 25 meters of the Nord Stream pipelines. So prior to the installation, we cleared munitions through using detonation techniques in the Gulf of Finland and in Russia. And in Germany, we lifted the munitions that we found close to the route. We had located a number of chemical munitions, and these were avoided.
The Nord Stream gas pipeline had to be constructed around the dangerous zones because so far no European country has taken responsibility for cleaning up the chemical munitions in the sea. Americans who fought two world wars far from their own shores have now discovered a dangerous surprise close to home. United States officials now admit that thousands of tons of their own unused weapons were dumped by the military all around the U.S. coasts.
I was working on an investigation involving the local disposal of military munitions at the local bases when I saw photographs in the 1950s, the 1940s, and the 1960s of barrels of mustard gas and lewisite and phosgene loaded up on barges being towed to sea. There are photographs of barrels of mustard gas being thrown overboard. The military's records were